This is episode 110 of UFO Encounters. This episode, I'm reading from Richard Lawrence's book, UFOs and the Extraterrestrial Message, a spiritual insight into UFOs and cosmic transmissions. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. I'm going to be reading an extract from Chapter 4, and this is what Richard has written. One type of UFO sighting you can be certain is an extraterrestrial spacecraft, however, is a close encounter of the third kind, when the witness usually sees the structure and shape of the craft and encounters one or more of those who man it. Such a witness was Joyce Bowles, whose experience in Hampshire, in the UK, was the subject of my first UFO investigation in November 1979. Also present at the encounter was a friend of hers, Ted Pratt. She was a very down-to-earth lady in her early 40s, and he was a sensible man in his late 50s. Neither seemed the type of person to invent a cock and bull story, and they certainly had no incentive for doing so. All they received from most quarters for their candor and courage in coming forward with their experience was ridicule and contempt. I was one of the first to interview them within days of the event taking place and found them convincing and credible witnesses. I have no reason to doubt that what they described occurred, and every reason to believe that it did. The following is a verbatim transcription of my interviews with them, both conducted in their own homes, using a handheld cassette tape recorder. Since its original publication in the Aetherius Society newsletter in December 1976, this is the first time it has been reproduced in any other publication. Mrs. Joyce Bowles. At 8:45 in the evening on Sunday, November 14th, I left my house to go and fetch my son, Stephen, who was at his girlfriend's place in Cheltenham. Mr. Ted Pratt and his wife, Renee, came over for the day. On going at 8:45, I asked Mr. Pratt to come with me and Renee to stay here to look after my younger children. We got roughly a mile up the road, went round the large roundabout and down towards Winchester Bypass, and I caught a glimmer of an orange light, a large orange light, over my left-hand side. I said to Ted, look at that orange light. He looked at it and then he said, mind, my girl, look where you're going, as I was driver of the car. Then again, I spotted the orange light and I said, Ted, just look at that. Too late, mate, it's gone. The orange light was disappearing behind the back of some trees, going towards the bypass still. I had a sharp left-hand corner to turn round to go down to Chilcombe Lane and into Chilcombe Village. I got down to second gear, went roughly 5 or 6 yards down the road, when my car started shuddering and shaking. All of a sudden, the engine cut out. We were lifted off the road in our car and went sideways across the grass verge, which is rather large, near to a big hedge. We felt a slight bump in the car, which I gathered was when the car came to the ground. Then I saw this long cigar-shaped object. It had either white vapour or steam coming out from underneath. Inside this thing, there were three people, but all we could see was their heads and shoulders. One of these three people got out, although I never saw a door open, and he walked straight across. By the way, the cigar-shaped thing was at an angle to my car, and as he got out of this thing, he walked straight across to the window of my side of the car. While he was walking towards me, I heard a faint whistling, like a whistling kettle. Whether it was from this man or from the thing, I don't know. The man came to my window, put a hand on the roof of my car, and bent down and looked in at Mr. Pratt and myself. Firstly, he looked at me. He had large pink eyes. Then he looked at Mr. Pratt. Afterwards, he looked at the dashboard. As he looked at the dashboard, the engine of the car started up without the ignition key being turned on. And while the engine of the car started up, the bulbs of my car lights became 4 times the power of what they normally are. Incidentally, my car lights were on full beam, since I turned them on when I came off the bypass to go into the lane. I huddled into Mr. Pratt, scared stiff. He wanted to get out of the car, but I wouldn't let him. I just clung to him, and I opened one of my eyes, as I had shut them some of the time, and I said, "Look out, Ted, the man's going round the back of the car. He's going round your side." Ted looked over his left shoulder to wait for him to come round, while I clung to him with my eyes shut tight. Ted was looking on his left side, then all about, and he came to face me. He said, "I can't see nothing now, Joyce." We looked, and whatever it was, this thing and this man had gone. Now the description of the man. He was 6 foot to 6 foot one tall. He had on something like a boiler suit with no revers that had a high neck, like a round polo neck. On the right side, he had what looked very much like a seam, but whether it was, I don't know. His hair was shoulder length and turned up at the ends. He had a beard and sideburns, which came down to meet the beard. After this gentleman went, Mr. Pratt said, "Shall I drive your car, Joyce?" "Not likely," I said, only because I was scared to get out of my car. Mr. Pratt said, "All right, Joyce, put her into first and see if she goes off." I switched the ignition on and put her into first gear to go off. I could not move. It was as though I was hitting against an invisible barrier, and yet there was nothing whatsoever in front to stop the car. After I put her back in neutral, I waited for a while before I started the car up again and went off. The car has been going like a bomb ever since. Richard Lawrence. Can you give me any more description of the man, of his face? Would you say it was a kind face or anything like this? JB. Mr. Pratt, unfortunately, is the one who can give more detail of the man than I can, but as far as I know, he wasn't an evil-looking man. Richard. The actual craft, you say it was cigar-shaped? JB. What we can see of it, it was like one of those fat cigars, shall we say like Sir Winston Churchill used to smoke, only bigger. This is the only way I can describe it, and it was glowing. How far away was it? About 5 yards. Have you been contacted by many people since then? Roughly how many do you think? Oh, about 3 dozen. I believe you have been contacted by scientists who have investigated the case. Yes, but let's be truthful about this. What do they know about it? Could you mention any of the phone calls you had? Yes, I had a phone call while a scientist was here at lunchtime today, telling me not to open my mouth about what I saw last Sunday, and that there would be a government official coming around to see me. I put the phone down, and then the scientist who was here went out immediately and made a phone call to London. He could not get hold of anyone he wanted to contact in London, so he phoned someone in Cosham, I think. Then the phone rang again, within a matter of half an hour, and it was the same gentleman. He warned me that on no account should I say anything about the incident at all, and my remarks were, "This is not Russia, this is England, and I have the perfect right to say what I want, and what is the truth I will say." Did he give any reason why you shouldn't speak? No, he didn't. All he kept telling me was to shut my mouth. He didn't say what would happen if you did speak. He said harm could come to me, but he did not get the chance to say any more to me because I put the receiver back down. Have you had any other government investigation? No, I've had people here, but not from the government as far as I know, unless they are being cagey about it. I believe some people have tried to tell you that you didn't really see a flying saucer. Yes, that is perfectly true, and it makes me cross, because they come here trying to pick me to pieces, saying it was imagination, or that it could have just been a dairyman or something. That is plain stupid. After all, if it had been a dairyman, and there is no dairy where I go to fetch my son, I would have known who it was, since I know all the dairymen in the area. But the same man who said that had also visited me on the Wednesday and said, "Mrs. Bowles, I believe every word you say, because as I ask you questions, you do not hesitate. You look me straight in the face and answer me." This episode I was reading from Richard Lawrence's book, UFOs and the Extraterrestrial Message, a spiritual insight into UFOs and cosmic transmissions. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. A great way to support this podcast is to sign up to Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. If you want to give the extended episodes a try, there is a 7-day free trial. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.